Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, knowledge of the absolute text number 7. Atak parataram nanyad kinchit asti dananjaya mayi sarvamidam protam sutre mani gana iva matak beyond me parataram superior na not anyat kinchit anything else asti there is dananjaya a conqueror of wealth mayi in me sarvam all that be idam which we see proktam is strung sutre on a thread manigana pearls eva like translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung in a thread. Purport. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. This is confirmed in every step. In this verse, in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person, that the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth, is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, personality of Godhead, is Lord Krishna, who is the primal Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Shveta Sutara Upanishad 3.10. Tato yad uttaratam tad arupam anamayam ya etad vidur amritas te bhavanti ate tare dukam eva piyanti. In the material world, Brahma, the primal living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental. But those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam, but this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad substantiate this as follows. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam aditya varnam tamasaparastat tam eva vidit Vaiti mrityum eti nanyat panta viditain yenaya yasmat param naparam asti kinchid yasmin naio na jayo sti kinchit riksha iva stabdo dvi tishtatyekas Tishtat yekas tinedam purnam purushena sarvam. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness. Only he who knows him can transcend the bounds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest, and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree, and he illuminates the transcendental sky. As the tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung in a thread. Everything is connected to Krishna, according to this verse. But as when the pearls are placed on a thread, one can see the pearls, but one can't see the thread. Similarly, in the material world, we see everything, but we don't see who's behind everything. Still, we're offered an opportunity to experience Krishna, especially through the chanting of the holy names. And there are different levels of chanting. Generally, it's emphasized, we should just chant in here. Because, generally speaking, most of the things that we're thinking about are just a waste of time. Although we take them seriously. And even if one time I wrote to Srila Prabhupada and asked him, when I'm chanting, is it all right if I remember Krishna's pastimes? So one may think, oh, Prabhupada would write back, oh, I'm so happy you're remembering Krishna's pastimes when you're chanting. But that's not what he wrote me. He said, when you chant, you should simply chant and listen. And if Krishna's pastimes come spontaneously, that's very nice, but not that we're trying to artificially remember. If Krishna walked into the room, we'd probably stop reading Bhagavad Gita and ask him what would he like. Because some people maybe keep on reading the Bhagavad Gita. Hopefully they read the Bhagavad Gita to Krishna if he walked into the room. Would you like to read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna? I think you'd probably get a, you know, you get some good remembrances if we sit down and read together. But if Krishna is personally present, then what is the need to do anything else but to serve Krishna? Similarly, if Krishna is actually not different from his name, then what else do we have to do than simply try to experience Krishna when we chant Hare Krishna? And what blocks our experience of Krishna is that we're thinking of other things other than Krishna. But if we chant Hare Krishna, we think about Krishna, but we should think about how we're chanting. In other words, the closer we get to pure chanting, the closer we get to experiencing Krishna as he actually is. The closer we can chant as the pure devotees chanting, such as Srila Prabhupada, then the more we can experience Krishna. Because Prabhupada's chanting was the chanting of a person who is fully experienced in Krishna. Therefore, we have to, first of all, try to be able to hear Prabhupada's chanting. Very rarely do we hear it in temples nowadays, devotees playing Prabhupada, chanting. They like what they consider sweeter music. Prabhupada's chanting is so profound, people get, are not so much sometimes attracted to it, because it's just so profound. They can't understand it. But if we try to chant as Srila Prabhupada was chanting, then we become more conscious of Krishna. It's not a question of just chanting Hare Krishna. It's chanting offenselessly. And then above fencelessly, there's purely. Above, there's Namaparad, there's Namabhas, there's Shudanam, and then there's Bhavanam and Premanam. When we're chanting, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, when we're chanting on the stage of Vajna Kriya, or even in Artha Niritti, then what is our benefit? We get the chance to chant some more. will get enough attracted that we'll come back the next day and chant some more. It's when we come, when we chant in the state of nishta, then we spontaneously remember Krishna's form. And when we chant on the name, I forget the different types of metal that Bhaktivinoda Thakura describes. One of them is, I think it starts with lead, and then there's copper, there's silver, there's gold, there's Chintamani stone, something like that. You remember? Something like that. So, chanting at the state of nishta, which means simply chanting and liberating from material conceptions, hankering and lamenting, that's nishta. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Shoshiti Nakankshiti, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. One becomes joyful simply if he gives up hankering and lamentation. People are thinking that if I fill my hankering and if I are able to satisfy my lamentations, then I'll become happy. But actually by hankering and lamenting, we simply become more miserable. That when we give up hankering and lamenting, then we become prasanatma, we become joyful. And what's the symptom of someone who's given up hankering and lamentation? When he looks around, he sees all living entities as Krishna's eternal servants. Generally, our hankering and lamentation is relationship to others. We look at someone, we start crying. We look at someone else, we start hankering. Generally, in between that, we look at people and we're angry or frustrated or, you're the one who did it. Only time separates you from the reaction. So actually our emotions are experienced in relationship to living entities at least. If not human beings, then other living entities. Or things that remind us of living entities. You may see a dead body, your enemy, you may feel great joy, but it's because of the relationship you had with that enemy when he was alive. So to give up that hankering lamentation, the symptom is that we begin to see everyone as Krishna's eternal servant. Then we can actually begin real devotional service. So that's called nishta. Without remembering Krishna's form, there's no question of serving Krishna. He must be a person, or at least not pure devotional service. We're serving a person, a living entity. And when one chants at the state of ruchi, or taste, then that's considered a certain, what is that, a gold coin? A silver coin, I think. At the state of something. $16, that's pretty much. Well, it's pretty cheap. I wish I could. You know where they're selling it? I'll take two. That price. Maybe we can buy something for everyone. Wouldn't that be nice? In any case, at the state of ruchi, when one chants the holy name, one can experience Krishna's qualities. That's why it's ruchi. It means experience. And since one sees everything in relation to Krishna, therefore one is always experiencing everything in terms of taste. Everything takes on taste. The floor will be tasteful. Everything will be tasteful. It's not that you look at the floor and you get depressed, and you look at Krishna and you become tasteful. Everything becomes the same quality as Krishna. Tasteful. Ruchi. And when that taste increases, then the taste becomes so intense one cannot give it up. That's called asakti. So at that time, one remember, in the stage of asakti, one is seeing everything in relation to Krishna's pastimes. That's why it's asakti. One doesn't see anything as apart from Krishna's pastimes. Everything becomes connected as part of Krishna's pastimes. Even this material world is seen as simply a pastime of Krishna. And in the stage of bhava, bhava is one ray of the sunlight of prema, then the taste becomes so intense that one's original feelings towards Krishna are awakened. And one actually begins to enter into Krishna's pastimes. Because the feelings itself towards Krishna that we have, not only one is seeing everything as Krishna's pastime, but one actually enters one realizes one's own identity in Krishna's pastimes and begins to enter in, not as simply a sadhaka performing sadhana, even at the stage of asakti, but one actually begins to act in one's spiritual identity. At the stage of bhava, one's spiritual body becomes aware of one's spiritual identity, and one's spiritual body begins to manifest. And when you multiply that millions and billions of times, whatever it is, then it develops into prema. Because bhava is only one ray in the sunlight of prema. And then one actually enters into the pastimes of Krishna in spiritual form. And that's the beginning of actually, really Krishna consciousness. Then prema goes to sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, mahabhava, and two different stages of mahabhava. Aniruddha, mahabhava, and then what's the other one? I don't know. It doesn't sound right. Anyhow, there are two different stages of mahabhava. Chandavali has one stage, mahabhava. Supposedly Shrimati Radharani's competitor, and Radharani has the higher stage, mahabhava. Do you know what the relationship between Chandavali and Radharani are? How they're related? Do you know? No one knows? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they're sisters. That's why sisters don't get along in this world. Their reflection. They're sisters. And who is Ananga Manjari? Yeah, and who is she in Krishna's pastimes? Who is she expansion of? Balaram. So if you want to get a little confused, just read. I go beyond our understanding. And where is her place in Radhakund? Ananga Manjari. Yeah, that's right. She's in the center of her own little island in Radhakund. So it would be nice to develop a little transcendental vision, go there. Of course, we're not interested in seeing Chandravali. But Ananga Manjari would be all right. I guess we wouldn't mind if we saw Chandravali. I mean, I wouldn't complain. I think there's a certain, those who are followers of Rupa Goswami, they have a certain relationship with the right-wing gopis. Here in the material world, we have the left people, the people on the left side of the political party, and the people on the right side, the conservatives and the liberals. It's in the spiritual world too. Left-wing gopis and the right-wing gopis. This is just a reflection. That doesn't mean not the liberal and the Republican, so. It's a little different. Different ways of satisfying Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. We don't have it.
mentions the silent tree. The Lord is like the silent tree. I think all the trees I know to be silent.
Depends if you were a tree. If you were a tree, you'd probably get a chance to talk to the other trees. Krishna is like a tree. He hears all the other trees talking, but they're all talking nonsense, so he doesn't reply.
I remember, Smita Krishna Maharaj, he talks with the trees.
Does he?
Yeah. He talks to them and he listens back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Krishna's like a silent tree. Anything else?
How should we understand when one sees even this world like Krishna's pastimes, in which context, for example, suffering of some people or living beings?
It's all part of Krishna's pastime. Suffering is meant to help us become inspired to take shelter of Krishna. That's why suffering is there. If we do things that take us away from Krishna, the suffering is there to help us, encourage us to go back to Krishna. That's the only reason why suffering is there. It's to teach us not to go away from Krishna.
Well, for someone that even doesn't know Krishna and a lot of bad things are happening in material world.
Yeah, a lot of it. That's it.
So, well, how can they relate to that? I mean, they
can't. Because they're not interested in relating to it. But if they suffer enough, they might become interested. In other words, Krishna knows people's sincerity. If people who are generally atheistic, if they suffer enough, they might try to think, well, maybe there's a God to take shelter, at least in human life, in some kind of civilized life. Then they may think, well, nothing else works, let me try this, let me go to God and see if He can help. Therefore, there are churches, or there used to be churches, and people get some relief. That's why they go there. They become a little moral in a church, hopefully. It works. Not only the Hare Krishna movement, but there's so many different places which represent God to different degrees. And when they go there, they get a little relief. A little encouragement to take up the path. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, you were mentioning the necessity of meditating on a body if we want to be counted as a personalists.
Krishna's form. Meditating on the form of Krishna.
Okay, spiritual body should be there.
We don't want to just meditate on material bodies.
Yeah, of course. But I think that there is, I mean, that's my intuition, which might be incorrect, that there is something more important, a principle beyond the spiritual body, which is, for example, some demand of rasa, which produces the body, which fulfills that particular demand of rasa, and then the body is not as itself ultimate reality, but exchange is ultimate reality.
Have you been reading the Shri Rakbasya?
No, this is from Shankaracharya.
Yeah.
No, but isn't exchange the most important, or it goes simultaneously?
Well, first of all, we're not about to enter into rasa with Krishna. First, you have to realize who you are. You have to develop the feelings. Right now, we don't have, you know, if we're conditioned souls, it means our main feeling is towards our material body, our material conceptions. So first we have to understand Krishna gradually, or we should say, gradually Krishna reveals himself to us.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I see that he is kind, but I don't have any clue about his body. But I see his
hand. Well, here he is.
I mean, but this is still
who do you, who do you think came here? Is he imitating Krishna or something?
But this is still mailboxes. He says that in issue, not in Nectar of Instructions, he says that, that I mean, Agra...
Archivagra.
Is Krishna.
Yes, they're Krishna.
But he says, but on one hand, it again isn't.
What do you mean it's not? In what way isn't it?
Yeah, he,
you're going to tell Lord Chaitanya, you're, in one sense you're Lord Chaitanya, in the other sense you're not. In what sense is he not Lord Chaitanya?
He is giving an analogy of a post office and of a mailbox.
Does he look like a post office?
I mean, he should be. And he's saying that he might be considered in an analogy as a mailbox, but I don't want to.
He's not a mailbox. He's Krishna. It's an analogy that's given in the Bhagavad Gita in the chapter concerning devotional service. That, you know, the impersonalist, I think chapter 8, 12, that klesho dikaras desham avyakta saktam chetasam asaktahi kuter dukam dehavadviravapyate. That the post office box is given the analogy as a post office because it's the same as the post office. It's not because it's different from the post office. Because if you go to the post office and put your letter, it goes to its destination. Or if you put the letter in the post box, it goes to its destination. It's not saying that the deity is just a box and the real thing is some office someplace else. It's an analogy about the letter being put into the box, not what the box is. So if you worship the Lord Chaitanya, it's the same, or a Krishna, it's exactly the same as Lord Chaitanya or Krishna. Yes?
But there are different deities. There is particular picture of Lord Chaitanya which I can relate to and
because
I like.
You can't see, first of all,
yeah.
We can't even see the deity right before us. Yeah. And besides that, Lord Chaitanya can expand himself in many different forms. Not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can only be in one form. He expands himself, or Krishna expands himself, in a form which we can see. So, and when we become purified, then we'll see it's not different from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes?
But
okay. Go ahead, let him make the comment.
Me or him?
No, let him make the comment.
Some years ago, Chandramouli Maharaj gave a seminar about it at one of the Bhakti Sanghams, how different devotees see the deities. So he says that Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam, they all have faith in the deity, but the Kanishta can see the deity as a mailbox, as a symbolic representation of God. He has the faith that this is the symbolic representation of God. And Madhyam, he sees deity as God directly, and Uttam has direct exchanges with the deity here and now. He was basing this on Brihad Bhagavatamrita conversation of Narada Muni and Gopkumar, saying that these are three levels of our increasing realization of deity's presence.
Something like that. I mean, the Madhyama Adhikari, because to Krishna he has Prem, therefore he not only sees Krishna as a deity, but he also has a he also experiences a relation with Krishna. Otherwise, there's no question of Prema. I mean, of course, Madhyama goes all the way up to Asakti. So he sees the deity as part of Krishna's pastimes too. He sees at the stage of Ruchi, one begins to taste everything in relation to Krishna. This stage of Asakti, one sees everything as Krishna's pastimes. So he sees the devotees performing service in the temple and the deities as all part of Krishna's pastimes. Now, at Bhava, he actually enters into those pastimes in his spiritual form. But still, there's the pastime of Krishna, even when we're in these material bodies. the state of Vaisakhi, which is the higher, and even a Ruchi, I mean, even now, one can even understand that this is Krishna's pastime in the temple. But anyhow, it's just, there is some difference, but it's not, I don't know in Brihad Bhagavatamrita exactly what he's referring to.
There's a question by Gop Kumar to Narada Muni, why it's in the definition of Kanishta Adhikaris that he has faith in the deity, because Gop Kumar himself is very attached to deity worship, and then Narada explains different levels.
Yeah, I can understand that Archam Eva Hariye Pujam Yakshariye, that the neophyte devotee, his interest in the deity is business, generally speaking, a kind of a business mentality. He wants something from the deity, so there's no real prema. I mean, of course, the devotee who's striving for to be a Madhyama Adhikari, he gets a reciprocation with the deities. But for just a regular neophyte devotee who comes to the temple as a business deal and puts money in the box hoping to, you know, get some reciprocation, or even practices sadhana bhakti to get free from distress or get some material remuneration, satisfy his inquisitiveness, or to get liberated from material existence, then Krishna doesn't reciprocate in terms of prema. But for the Madhyama Adhikari, since Ishvare Tayata Dineshu Felicheshu Dvitsasu Cha, there is a reciprocation of love. So love means pastime with Krishna to some degree or another. And even when striving to become a Madhyama Adhikari, to act on that platform, then the five powerful processes, namely chanting the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deity, serving the devotees, and living in a holy place, and one can experience bhava, ecstasy, if one concentrates his mind sincerely upon Krishna. So even at this, when one is trying to become a Madhyama Adhikari, one can actually start experiencing some reciprocation with the deity, because the deity is one of the objects of prema, of bhava, that one can experience. But generally, those who are working on the neophyte platform, they won't experience that. Therefore, we don't emphasize working on the neophyte platform. Our whole movement is to bring people to work on the liberated platform. That's why initiation is there, to give up the false ego and simply identify oneself as a servant of the servant of Krishna. So that's working on the Madhyama Adhikari platform. Oh, yeah. Okay. Beginning of liberation, that conception, to work in that conception. Is that right? Yeah. We're going to still have a question or a comment?
I mean, yeah, thank you for, I was during the, I got my answer. I want to explain what I understand. If I cannot be satisfied with only perceiving Krishna's quality of kindness by his actions in material world, I have to get some realization of his spiritual body if I want to proceed to higher stages of exchanges, because bodies are necessary for exchanging emotions or anything with Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna's
body is a matter of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. So if you want to experience bliss, knowledge, and eternity, you have to experience Krishna. The Shanta Bhaktas, or those in Shanta Rati, or Shanta Ras, they're more attracted by Krishna's effulgence. And even when they see this Krishna, they usually see him as the super soul, not as the supreme object of service at all in Shanta Ras. So when they come from impersonalism to Shanta Rasa, then they can experience something of ecstasy in relation to Krishna. But that's not really even devotional service yet. Real devotional service, except if you're in the spirit in Goloka Vrindavan or someplace, you're taking the position of serving Krishna in Shanta Ras. The real devotional service generally begins at Dasya Ras. And dasaras means you're serving a person.
And his kindness is not different from his body, but we cannot conceive of that equality.
We can't even conceive of who we are with the speaker Krishna. We don't even know who we are. We have some idea that I'm not this body, but we don't. The difference between knowing you're not the body and knowing who we actually are. But we shouldn't think ourselves a peacock in Krishna's pastimes prematurely, because we might be a cow. We get disappointed. A blade of grass, angry for Krishna to step on us. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Kita.